Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
Welcome back, American Savages, to The Savage Truth. I am your host, Cicely Davis. Thank you so very much for taking the time to join me and sharing the conversation and, you know, kind of hearing my perspective on what's going on. If you're new to the channel, I absolutely welcome you and thank you for making the decision to hear my perspective and again, to join in on that conversation. For the ride or dies, for those of you who are not new, who've joined me last week or the week before and through the mid-30s or what have you from the beginning, the ride or dies. Thank you so very much for your support. I really, truly appreciate it. Now, whether you're new or returning, there's an ask and it is always the same. And it is this: to please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. Let's get into what's happening. It's always eventful, never a dull moment under the presidency of Donald J. Trump. Columbia University, of course, and soon probably many to follow, has bowed to President Trump's demands. Oh, yes. Columbia University has reluctantly bowed to President Donald Trump's demands after the administration threatened to pull $400 million in federal funding over the school's handling of anti-Israel protests on campus. Now, this sends a clear message. I absolutely love the messaging and I love the optics of this. In typical Trump fashion, he made it clear that if the Ivy League institution doesn't shape up, it would face the consequences of losing critical government grants. And here's the thing, when Donald Trump says it, they know he means it. Okay, he will absolutely follow through. The decision came after the protests, some of which crossed the line. Wait, most of which crossed the line into anti-Semitic rhetoric, led to the detention of Muhammad Khalil, a Columbia graduate student and local resident, by ICE. The university, facing the harsh reality of losing federal support, was forced to enact a series of reforms. They had to be forced, but that's okay. In a letter sent by interim President Katrina Armstrong, the university agreed to appoint a senior vice provost to conduct a full review of its regional studies programs, starting with the Middle East. Columbia will overhaul its disciplinary process, restrict protests inside of academic buildings, and implement a ban on wearing masks to conceal identities on campus, except for legitimate health reasons. The school also pledged, again by force, okay, to make its Institute for Israel and Jewish Studies more robust by hiring additional faculty members and expanding intellectual diversity within that very same department. Furthermore, the university will adopt a new, more stringent definition of anti-Semitism and expand its program in Tel Aviv. These changes were seen as a direct response to the Trump administration's ultimatum, which demanded that the school also place its Middle Eastern, South Asian, and African Studies department under academic receivership for at least 5 years. This move, while controversial among some students, who cares what they think, is a victory for the principles of free speech and academic integrity, ensuring that the universities are held accountable for fostering an environment of open, balanced dialogue rather than promoting divisive and dangerous ideologies. In other words, Donald Trump is forcing them to behave like a responsible Ivy League school. Okay, these are things he shouldn't have had to force, but unfortunately he did. Now, let's see in the upcoming months what the impact of Donald Trump's forced hand will have on the institution. And we move on because Don Lemon, unfortunately, is back in the news. And just so you know, Don Lemon, yes, has insulted me. He has insulted me personally. But first, let me run this video of Don Lemon on AOC and Jasmine Crockett. Here it is.
People love AOC. People love Jasmine Crockett. People love Eric Swalwell and the like. And I think that the Democratic Party should put the people out there who the people want. They should put the politicians out there who the people want, who they're asking for, who are meeting the moment with the same energy that
they're not asking for AOC.
Yes, they are.
The people you party with.
No, I party with don't like AOC.
Oh, please.
No, they don't at all.
Well, most people don't. But she's AOC, very far left.
Let me tell you why I'm saying that. Because because people will vote for AOC and Donald Trump on the same ticket. Because they're authentic. No, because they're authentic. I think you're wrong about that.
What people like about people like Trump and Fetterman is they're, because it's irrelevant to her life.
But you don't know her life.
I know that being a gorgeous woman who I wouldn't even know was Hispanic in a city that's has a million Hispanics and does not treat them badly.
But that doesn't mean she doesn't struggle. That doesn't mean that she was set down.
It implies it.
But that doesn't mean that she was set down in Hispanic ghetto in the Bronx and had to deal with that growing up, and that she's come from a working class family.
It implies that in some way she's behind the eight ball because of that, and it's just not true. And so
I don't know if she's behind the eight ball, but I don't think she's as privileged as many people who are in Congress right now.
Is that privileged or not? She was a bartender.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, as if that wasn't enough, he then insulted me personally. See if you can point it out.
The same thing that when I see not all black Republicans, but I see a black MAGA person who is carrying Donald Trump's water and they know that he's lying. It is the shortest line to the front. Because if you're black and you're whatever, you're just in line with a bunch of other Democrats that are doing the same thing that you're doing. But if you become a black MAGA person, it's like, whoa, let's book this person. Let's put him on television.
So you don't think you can be a sincere black MAGA person?
I think there can be sincere Republicans.
But you can't be a sincere black Republican?
I don't think that you can be a rational MAGA be black and be a rational MAGA person. I think you can be black and be a Republican.
I think they would find that very insulting.
Now, as a black Republican, as that I am, I can't help but feel a deep sense of pride. And I say this for the benefit of Don Lemon and those like him, a deep sense of pride when I think about being an American. This country is a land of opportunity where anyone, regardless of race, can pull themselves up by their bootstraps and achieve greatness. But apparently, to Don Lemon, I'm some kind of anomaly, a walking contradiction. He, along with way too many other Democrats, seem to think that the only way a black person can truly experience America is by living in the shadow of Jim Crow, as if my entire existence is defined by segregation and discrimination from decades ago. They are stuck in the 1960s, but I was born in the mid-70s, okay? They're stuck in the 1960s, constantly rehearsing old history lessons as if that's the only narrative that matters, the only history that exists, the only story that there is to tell in our rich history here in America. Do they not realize that for many of us, the American dream has been alive and well since those days? I don't think they even realize that. I don't think they want to realize or acknowledge that. The Democrats, with their narrow-minded views, have an almost pathological obsession with portraying Black Americans as perpetual victims of some systemic oppression that can only be remedied by government intervention and the elite white Democrat savior, as if we're incapable of thinking for ourselves, sitting back, waiting for a handout, just longing for someone to hand us a welfare check while simultaneously preaching that we're all victims of white supremacy. Meanwhile, this washed up, no brain, irrelevant imbecile is married to a white man. Okay, he talks about white supremacy is prevalent in America, and he's married to a white man. It's fascinating how they seem to believe that my struggle is a collective struggle that needs to be spoon-fed to me by them. It's almost as if success stories of Black entrepreneurs, Black doctors and lawyers, and yes, even Republicans like myself, don't even exist in their world. They refuse to acknowledge the strength, the perseverance, and individual agency we have. And why is that? Because it doesn't fit the narrative they've been pushing for years. But here's the truth, the savage truth. I'm proud to be an American, not because of my skin color, but because of the values this country, this very specific, exceptional country was founded upon. This nation is a testament to freedom. It is a testament to self-reliance and the power of personal responsibility. I don't need to be coddled by the left, nor do I need them to constantly remind me of my so-called struggles. I'm not interested in their patronizing pity party or their false promises. I know my worth, and I know that I, in America, I'm free to shape my own future. If the Democrats and Don Lemon truly want to help Black Americans, maybe they should stop seeing us as helpless and start respecting us as individuals who can stand on our own two feet, just like anyone else in this country. But I guess that's just too much to ask when they'd rather play the race card for the political gain, of which, in Don Lemon's case, there is no gain. He will remain a guest on someone's show at best. As a matter of fact, stop giving time and air to Don Lemon. If we do that, he will fade away to the Democrat wilderness where he belongs. No one cares for Don Lemon's opinion, his perspective, or take on any issue. And that, my friends, is a savage truth. Let's move on, okay? Because they are burning Teslas all across this country, okay? You're noticing that, you're hearing about it. Maybe even in your own neighborhood, there are people receiving notes on their cars saying, you know, I really like you, really respect you, you should consider selling your vehicle, okay? The recent surge in incidents involving the burning and vandalizing of Teslas across the country is an alarming trend that speaks to the deepening and divisions in our society. From a Republican perspective, these acts are not just isolated incidents of criminal behavior. They represent a larger issue of political and ideological extremism. Tesla, as a company, is often associated, or at least has been, with progressive values, ranging from its support for electric vehicles to its high-profile CEO, Elon Musk, who is frequently seen as a figure with strong liberal leanings. At least that's what they once thought of him. These targeted attacks seem to be rooted in a growing resentment towards both Musk's influence and the larger green energy agenda that Tesla symbolizes. And because he has flipped his ideologues, they are actually just angry and resentful of him. By vandalizing Teslas, these criminals are not simply committing acts of property damage. They are making a statement against a perceived elitism that, from a conservative point of view, threatens traditional American values and livelihoods, particularly in industries reliant on fossil fuels. For conservatives, the burning and vandalizing of Teslas signal a dangerous trend that could potentially spill over into other aspects of daily life, undermining the social fabric that once united the country.
It's really come as quite a shock to me that there is this level of hatred and violence. I think we just have a deranged, there's some kind of mental illness thing going on here, because this doesn't make any sense.
The random violence is nerve-wracking for Tesla drivers.
You have Teslas lit ablaze, Molotov cocktails thrown at Tesla dealerships.
Is it just me? I sense like a lot of people cutting me off, you know, driving real close.
Abby Berman, who lives in Venice Beach, California, says she got a creepy letter in her mailbox.
Hello, neighbor. Won't you please consider getting rid of your Tesla vehicle? The message you are sending at this point is, I am a Nazi too. I'm now nervous that my car is going to get vandalized, that somebody's watching me.
She says she's holding on to her Tesla, but many say they're contemplating selling.
I love the car. I don't like driving something that supports Elon Musk, so we're getting rid of it.
And just listen to Jimmy Kimmel's audience reaction when he mocked Elon's troubles.
Tesla stock is way down, almost disastrously so.
All the hatred is impacting sales, and now one major Tesla investor is calling on Musk to step down.
The company's reputation is just being destroyed by Elon Musk, and sales are plummeting. I think Tesla needs a new CEO.
Musk tells Fox News he believes it's all a conspiracy funded by his political enemies.
I think there are larger forces at work as well. I mean, I don't know who's funding it and who's coordinating it, because this is this is crazy. I've never seen anything like this.
He's actually thinking of ways that he can take action. But these are just simply criminal acts. There is clearly an organizer of this whole entire agenda. The efforts of the Democratic Party still thinking that they need to get out and burn and loot and vandalize hasn't gone away. That same old dog is still hunting the same old way. But we just simply need to figure out a way that we can stick together. And I know that Elon Musk, with full confidence, will get ahead of this issue. Now, speaking of billionaires, Dems are on this anti-billionaire kick, right? They're taking this anti-billionaire stance. It's a contradiction, of course. The Democrat Party has undergone a profound shift in its stance on billionaires. And this change is glaringly evident in their increasingly hostile rhetoric towards wealthy individuals. Now, historically, Democrats were quick to embrace the support of billionaires, especially when those billionaires aligned with their progressive causes. In fact, many wealthy individuals were celebrated by the party for their donations to liberal causes, philanthropic efforts, and their role in advancing progressive policies. This was especially true in the tech sector. Figures like Bill and Melinda Gates, Mark Zuckerberg, Jeff Bezos, Sheryl Sandberg, Taylor Swift, Oprah Winfrey were viewed as allies of the left, pushing agendas such as climate change action, woke ideology, perverted child sex education, failing economy, raging inflation, social justice, and faux healthcare reform. Now that one, just one billionaire who happens to be the wealthiest individual, the wealthiest billionaire in the world, has sided with Republicans, now all of a sudden there's an agenda to hate all wealthy and successful businessmen. That, of course, all change when Elon Musk, a self-made billionaire known for his groundbreaking work in electric vehicles and space exploration, began supporting Republican candidates and offering outspoken criticism of the left. The moment Musk's political leanings shifted, so too did the Democratic Party's stance on billionaires. From a Republican's perspective, of course, this shift is nothing short of hypocritical. The same Democrats who once cozied up to billionaires, even celebrating their wealth as a vehicle for positive social change, now vilify the very same class of individuals when they no longer align with the party's political agenda. This is a stark contradiction, highlighting the partisan nature of the Democrats' newfound disdain for billionaires. It's clear, crystal clear, that their outrage is not about wealth inequality or corporate greed, but rather about political power and control. The moment a billionaire like Musk refuses to toe the left-wing line, the Democrat Party quickly turns on him and others just like him, revealing that their animosity is more about ideological purity than a genuine concern for economic fairness. Republicans see this as a transparent attempt to consolidate power and maintain control over both the political narrative and the business world, all while pretending to champion the little guy. We'll keep a watch on that. Donald Trump is a rock star. You know he fills an arena just like so. And of course, we saw it once again at NCAA Wrestling. Let's watch the video. Oh, this was so great to watch. Now, I remember seeing Donald Trump for the very first time at the Target Center here in Minneapolis in 2018. And I'm telling you, that man brings an energy and rises a crowd like a rock star. It's so great to see. But notice that not only are the crowds cheering him, they're looking and anticipating him. They chant the USA because this is his electorate. These are the people that wanted him in. And he's so very well received, him and his cabinet there and a lot of his supporters. But the American people are who want to see him, but they absolutely approve to the tune of about 58%. And they approve of this president. So bravo to Donald Trump for continuing to be that very, very popular and to-do list president. And that, my fellow, is the savage truth. Now, on to another episode, another clip of Savage Soldiers. Watch. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, as always, to be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true. Till next time, I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.